The Church of God, the Eternal, presents the sixth message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled Habitat for God and Man, given in Eugene, Oregon, April 13th, 2024.
I'm going to start on the sixth message now in this series that I've entitled Habitat for God and Man. And so we're going through all of the specific elements that are required for physical life, focusing that of human beings on this earth, because that's the ones that matter as the children of God, as the creatures who were created by a powerful God for the purpose of qualifying to be born into his family. Then the way that he chose to put that creation together and the specific elements that are a part of these physical lives then are very important, not for just for the physical sake, but because they all have the antitypes, the type and the antitype in the spiritual that are very meaningful then for the future. But we're examining dwelling places in particular, or I'm just using the word habitat. But in the Bible, the Bible does use the word habitations, but a lot with dwelling places. We've already seen that God is the one who created man with specific requirements in order to maintain these physical lives and our existences. And each element is critical. In other words, take one of them away, and then human beings would become extinct sooner or later. So we're covering then all of the specific elements that are very easy for us to take for granted, because we just do. We just assume this and we assume the other. But I'm trying to put a spotlight on each one of these critical elements for physical life and then show the spiritual dimension to it. Thus far, we've discussed the need for breath. That was the first one, right? God breathed into Adam, and that is when he became a living creature, a living soul, by breath. And this, and continuing to have breath is the first thing in order to stay alive at all. And then we saw also then the need for water, an integral element required for human life. And then last time we covered specifically the overall topic of food. All right. So, and again, I kept it, you know, the fact that I kept that in one sermon and didn't turn that into a mini series. But I point you back to all the things that are part of the Faith Once Delivered concerning proper food for human beings. But so these are easy to take for granted. Breath, and I included it with being able to breathe the atmosphere, you know, the air and the atmosphere that's required for us to be able to breathe, water and food. So now the question is, what else do human beings require, I'm going to say, in order to stave off extinction? Now, this one, now it starts to be debatable, because now we get into the different opinions about which is the next most critical thing. And it's not all, because I could say, you know, it could be clothing. But the one I'm going to pick, and we are going to cover clothing, but the one I'm going to cover today is shelter. Shelter from the elements is required for human beings. And a lot of you say, well, yeah, but think about it. Of all the ways that God could have made us as his children, he could have made us with, in essence, self-sustaining bodies and an outer covering that in itself could stand the elements without the need to actually have an artificial shelter that we use in order to provide the necessity of life and to augment then our quality of life. And yet houses, dwelling places, habitations are absolutely essential. Do you think that was an oversight? No, it wasn't. There was a reason God did it. And I want to compare it now to other creatures that he made on this earth out of the animal kingdom, who then don't need shelters like you and I do. So unlike animals who thrive, a number of them who thrive with only their natural coverings, man requires artificial insulation in the form of shelter in order to survive. Now there are ones, you know, survivalists, and they can take a minimum amount of things with them in the wild. Most of them take a tent, though. You know, you don't have to. You can live rough, as they call it. You know, and but one of the things you're going to find in most survival handbooks is the requirement to make yourself a shelter. So somehow, some way, most people consider that part of the element of your survival is going to be to have a shelter. A lot of the creatures that God made on this earth don't need it. I'm going to give you the example of the polar bears. I don't have a quote to read. I just kind of put this one in more at the last minute. Polar bears, for the most part, don't need a shelter. And look at the extreme climate that they exist in. They can handle very sub-zero temperatures, like minus 40 centigrade, which would be about minus 50 degrees Fahrenheit. They can live and exist in that kind of environment, and they don't need a house or even a cave. Now, there are certain times in extreme circumstances where a polar bear, I've read, will actually dig an ice cave. These polar bears have big, huge claws, and they can dig, so they could actually dig out a temporary dwelling in the snow and the ice. But for the most part, they don't do that. Polar bears, and unless it's a female who's pregnant and giving birth, and then she would have a temporary den, but it's only for a few weeks or a few months. And then these polar bears basically are roamers. So in extreme conditions, and yet they're out in the elements. So how is it that a polar bear does that? You couldn't do that. You and I couldn't survive. Not even for a few minutes in some of those conditions. You know, a polar bear does just fine. Because the way God made them, they basically carry their house with them. What I read is that polar bears actually have two different layers of fur. But the most significant one is not even really fur at all. Now you think that, oh, well, polar bears have nice, fluffy, white fur. No, they don't. Actually, what you think is fur is actually hollow tubes. And they're not white, they're translucent. So they're clear, and so they appear to be white, but they're really colorless. So these are built-in insulators. So it's not hair. It's these insulators with these hollow tubes that completely cover and actually with the air provides a layer of insulation. You know what else a polar bear has? About 4.5 inches of blubber or fat. And what I've read is that this is what allows them to actually swim in frigid water and not lose their body heat. So they don't really need the fat, their fur, or their, you know, their hair fur, whatever you want to call it, provides plenty of protection when they're out of the water, but it's the layers of fat that allow them actually to swim in that frigid water and also to maintain their body heat. I also read that actually they're more inclined to get too hot, so that when a polar bear runs, even in absolutely sub-zero temperatures, they're mostly in danger of overheating because they have so much built-in insulation. Actually, that increase in metabolism could actually cause them to overheat. So very different from you and me, wouldn't you say? Very, very different. So according to God's absolutely creative choices and the way he made all of these living things that exist upon the earth, there is such a wide variety. So why didn't he give you and me insulation like that? I mean, he could have. He could have made it so that you and I don't even need to worry about having a house, a shelter, a place to keep warm or to keep dry or to come out of the cold. But he didn't do it. Why did he make us so vulnerable? which is the best way I can describe it compared to a lot of creatures that live on this earth and do just fine out in the wild. Human beings are very vulnerable, and we need shelter. I will read a short account here of another animal. This is actually a little bit about sheep. And because God makes the comparison with us being like sheep, here is an excerpt I took from an article called The Grand Design, Form and Color in Animals, published in February 1983 by a woman named Sally Foy, concerning the wool of specifically merino sheep. I didn't know anything about this particular kind. There's all kind, and there's, you know, sheep that live at all kind of latitudes, and then you've got your wild mountain goats and the ones that live in extreme climates and all of that. But specifically, here's a paragraph on this particular merino sheep. It says, generally, a dense coat of underhairs, as in the wool of a sheep, is particularly effective in temperature control because hundreds of tiny air pockets become trapped among the hairs and make an insulating layer between animal and climate. So air, again, is an insulator, but unlike the polar bear that actually has air in a hollow hair, if you will, the sheep, it's air in between the fibers of its hair. It goes on to say, sheep with thick wool, such as the merinos of Australia, can stay warm in freezing weather and conversely stay cool in the heat of summer. In both cases, the difference between the temperature at the skin and on the wool surface, a distance of 8 centimeters, may be 40 degrees centigrade or more. And animals with less thick coats, simply erecting the hair increases the resistance to cold. Isn't that interesting? Now, if you've had the hair raise on your skin, I don't know that that keeps us from cold. That may be the natural reaction when we are subjected to cold, but it sure doesn't protect us against getting cold. Human beings are subject to hypothermia in extreme cold conditions. These animals, not so. Now, sheep are not as impervious to the elements as polar bears by comparison, because they actually, at least the domesticated sheep that we're familiar with, do need some type of shelter, but not all the time, because in better weather, like in the spring, when it's not extremely cold or extremely hot, they do just fine being out in the pasture. Our first text today, Psalm 23, verse 1 and 2, where David was inspired in this prayer, in this psalm, actually to describe himself as a sheep, with his God as the shepherd. You know this very well, you have it memorized, but think about it in these terms. Psalm 23, verse 1, a psalm of David, "The Eternal is my shepherd. I shall not want." He's saying, as a sheep with a shepherd like God, I have everything I need. Verse 2, "He maketh me to lie down in green pastures." Wow, isn't that a blessing? I just, value so much the opportunity to go and lay out in the middle of a green pasture. Not me, because I'm not a sheep. But for a sheep, it's just fine. That is a perfect habitat for them when the temperature is not too extreme one way or the other. And they exist just fine to sleep out in a pasture and consider it a blessing. For you and me, we need more shelter, don't we? We need an artificial shelter. Now, sheep also thrive from the extreme climate with a shelter to keep them out of the rain, to give them protection from the cold and from predators, by the way. And so they will thrive and do better if they have some kind of a shelter. But notice Proverb 22, verse 3. Compared to these creatures that God made with everything that they need in order to survive and to thrive in the open country, if you will, a human being is different. We need to be smart about providing for some elements of artificial shelters and other necessities. Proverb 22, verse 3, a prudent man foresees the evil, or I'm going to say the threat of any kind, and hides himself. He responds to a given set of circumstances and makes accommodation. Prudent man foresees the evil and hides himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. You say, well, what does that have to do with shelter? It's not shelter in particular, but shelter is one of those things that will kill you if you don't have it in certain climates and environments. And so it is something that we need in order to provide for. Now, we have an increasing number of homeless, especially out here in Central Oregon, who seem to think they don't need it, or else they have they build their own little primitive shelters, like there's a tent right across the road over here, and they keep popping up all the time. And, you know, that's the environment in which we live now, where these travelers and these homeless who don't care to take advantage of the services that are available to them because they'd have to actually follow some rules are very happy to live rough. And they do. But they still require, and they build themselves their little shelters, don't they? Even if it's out of cardboard or plywood or, you know, some type of a tarp, they make themselves a shelter. So we are required to make provision, even if it's very primitive, if you want to survive, let alone thrive. There's an old saying concerning a foolish man, or anyone, to say he doesn't have enough sense to come out of the rain. You may have heard that one. Well, that I think is hand in hand with the point. If you don't have enough sense to come in the rain, it means you're so clueless that you're not even providing the means to have a shelter over your head, which you need. So a wise human being is going to take those things into consideration and provide for it. Isaiah 4, verse 6. Isaiah 4, verse 6 says, and there shall be a tabernacle. Oh, so here we are already now. We're going to talk about dwelling places, and we're going to talk about shelters. And why is it that tabernacles and temples and houses are an integral part by God's design in his work with human beings? Because there's something about these things which are important for us. There shall be a tabernacle for what purpose? For a shadow in the daytime. Ah, protection against the rays of the sun beating down. That's a threat to your human life. If you get too hot and you cannot escape from the sun, that's a threat. There shall be a tabernacle for a shadow in the daytime from the heat. What else? And for a place of refuge, like from dangers, creatures, other human beings. And for what else? And for a covert, it means protection from storm and from rain. So not only from the heat from the sun's rays on one side, which is a threat, but also from other climatic elements like storms and rain. So God is the one through the prophet Isaiah now who confirms this need for a shelter to provide these things. What is the value of shelter? If I just use this one text, I say the value of shelter for human beings is to shield from the sun, but to protect from threats and to cover us from storms. So God made it so that man would require shelters from these elements. And anyone who doesn't have it is in danger to one degree or another. Isaiah 32, verse 18. Isaiah 32, verse 18 says, and my people shall dwell in a peaceable habitation. Now you can say, well, that just might mean a place, a piece of property or province or something. And actually, it's the Hebrew word nava, N-A-V-E-H. It means a home, a dwelling, a pleasant place. It also means a sheepcote or a stable. which tells you we're not just talking about a piece of property living out somewhere. We are talking about a shelter. My people shall dwell in a peaceable habitation and in sure dwellings and in quiet resting places. Do you think then it was an oversight that God made us the way we are with the need for these artificial elements in order to survive and to thrive? Not at all. Because when you understand the physical necessity of a shelter, a house, something over your head, then you're in a position to understand the spiritual dimension of that, which we're also going to get to today. Having a nice shelter is a sign of human prosperity, isn't it? I mean, it's one of those things when you think about whether someone is wealthy or not wealthy, you will look at where they live. It's just a natural thing. We do that without even thinking about it. Oh, he lives in a nice house. Or his dwelling is not very nice. He lives pretty rough. Deuteronomy 8, verse 11. Deuteronomy 8, verse 11. God's warning to Israel, and by extension to us, to all of the human family, and especially to the called, who he is holding responsible and accountable at this time. Deuteronomy 8, verse 11, beware that thou forget not the Eternal thy God in not keeping his commandments and in his judgments and his statutes, which I command you this day. Verse 12, lest when thou hast eaten and art full. So, what's the natural human proclivity? You get a full belly, number one. We already covered food last time. Lest when thou hast eaten and art full, and what else? And hast built goodly houses and dwell therein. Now what happens when human beings have those two elements? The assumption is they also have air to breathe and water to drink and clothes and all the other. But here are these main requirements which are kind of at the top of the list. You've got food to eat, and you've got a goodly house to live in. And if you have those things, what is a human being, you and me included, what are we inclined to do? Verse 13, and when thy herds and thy flocks multiply, and thy silver and thy gold is multiplied, which are elements of wealth that come after, you have the necessities, and all that thou hast is multiplied, then what happens? Verse 14, then thine heart be lifted up, and thou forget the Eternal thy God, which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. God is the one who saves us from slavery, as he did with Israel and brought them out. Now they went out, but not as vagabonds. They went out as travelers. And yet God provided all of their needs, including shelters along the way. So they were a blessed people, and yet the ultimate goal was not for them to live moving from place to place. They ended up doing it for 40 years because of their rebellion. But the intent was always for them to enter into a promised land and to be able to have property and to be able to have homes and be able to have the substances now, which God is describing here. And he says, beware, because when you get all of those things, then you're going to have a tendency to forget me. You're going to take it for granted. You're going to assume you have a right to it or that you'll always have it. And then you will depart from obedience to my commandments. And that's exactly what they did. Because that's exactly what human beings do. And so, of course, it was written for a warning for all of us. Because when we have too many blessings physically, we are automatically inclined to start backsliding concerning our thinking about God, caring about God, putting God first, and adhering to his commandments. We are much more inclined, in order to get serious spiritually about putting God first, when we are in dire straits. And then we cry out to God because we need somebody to save us. So we're in bad shape, physically, financially, health-wise, whatever it may be. And then we cry out to God, oh God, please save me. Bible is full of the example And that's what ancient Israel did time after time after time. God, please save me. When they finally got persecuted so much because God took away his special blessings, let them be overrun by strangers, take away their substance, enslave them, and imperil their lives and their freedoms and their quality of life. And then they would cry out, and then God would send them a champion, Whitney, and create the miracles in order to set them free again and restore them to all of these good things. And that would last about 40 years, because the generation who endured the deprivation and then was saved from it would learn their lesson, but they couldn't pass it on to their children. They couldn't pass it on to their children, which means the children had to learn the same lessons themselves, time after time, which is why all of this went in about 40-year cycles. You can see that all the way through a lot of the Old Testament. 40 years of blessing, followed by 40 years of captivity, followed by 40 years of blessing, followed by 40 years of captivity. Because every generation had to learn a lesson. But the warning was right here, and it always was. Beware, he said, because when you get blessed and you have all these necessities of life solved, then you're going to turn your attention to other things and you're going to forget me. And shelter is one of those key elements. Houses or shelters are a blessing also promised by God for the future. Notice Isaiah 65. Isaiah 65, verse 21 and 22, and this is a prophecy set in the time under the rule of Jesus Christ upon this earth, and very much of it, very likely, is during that period following the millennium. For those who come up in that great resurrection we call the second resurrection. Isaiah 65, verse 21, and what are they going to have? And what's part of the blessings that these physical people are going to receive under the benevolence of their King, Jesus Christ? And they shall build houses. Isn't that interesting? They shall build houses and inhabit them. That's considered a big blessing. God knows it. He made us to need it. They shall build houses and inhabit them, and they shall plant vineyards and eat the fruit of them. Verse 22, they shall not build and another inhabit. See, they're going to receive protection against human predators. Other people who want to take away what they have worked to achieve. Under the government of God, it's one of the great blessings. That if you spend your time and your energy and your blood, sweat, and tears in order to build a home for your family, you will be able to actually keep it and enjoy it and not have somebody come and take it away, including the government or back taxes or whatever. There won't be any property taxes. You will actually own, I say you, you will either be in the God family or you'll be waiting in the grave for the third resurrection and in eternal damnation. But for those who are in that second resurrection, they will be given property. They will have an estate for their family, which is theirs. They won't have to pay property taxes on it. They won't be in danger of having it confiscated. And they will have homes. And their homes will be grand. And they will enjoy then the fruit of all that they have applied themselves to build with support of a benevolent government who will help their families, not harm them. But these shelters, the principle of human shelter then is key to blessing, and our sense and God's determination of one who is blessed versus one who is cursed. You can't ignore this issue of houses, habitations, dwellings, shelter. All right, what about survival training? No, I didn't go to a lot of official books and stuff on, but if you're going to learn to live off the land or respond in an emergency situation, let's say you're in a plane crash and you survive in the wilderness, and now all of a sudden, how are you going to live? You need certain skills. Or you need to be with somebody who has certain skills. So I lifted this quote from this article, September 30 of 2019, called Four Needs in Wilderness Survival, from a publication called Trackers Earth. There's a ton of them out there, and they don't all agree. And I like this one because it has a funny edge to it, and it also acknowledges that not everybody agrees. But I want to give you a gist. Where is shelter on the list of necessities in a wilderness environment? If you're in a survival mode, thrust into now a threatening environment without a lot of the things you normally take for granted that you need, then what is the order of importance that you need to manage? So this article says, so let's say that you do find yourself on your own in a survival situation. That's where we can start with our wrong but useful model called the 3-30 rule. So that I didn't go on to say, well, what they disagree with on the 3-30 rule, but here's the 3-30 rule. It goes like this. One, you can survive 3 minutes in inclement air conditions. So in other words, you need air to breathe. If you don't, let's say you're found yourself in a cave with bad air. That's your number one thing to solve, just for example. You need air to breathe, and we've already covered that. So you can survive 3 minutes in inclement air conditions. Number two, you can survive 3 hours in inclement weather. You can survive 3 days without water. You can survive 30 days without food. And in this one, it says you can survive 30 years in a bad relationship. Is that on the real list? But this is, yeah. You can survive 30 years in a bad relationship. So this is a tongue-in-cheek recitation of the 3-30 rule. All right, it goes on to say, here's the important part. Based on this rule, you have a hierarchy of needs. And I think I'm going to cover at some point in this series Maslow's hierarchy of needs. That's a philosopher who kind of had all of this. There's some valuable elements in that. But anyway, based on this rule, it says you have a hierarchy of needs and a way to prioritize what you should secure first in order to be safe. Given that many of us are not exploring the ocean or traveling outside of our atmosphere, worrying about air is often not the issue. So it's saying number one on the list may not be an issue in your case. So it says we start with the effects of inclement weather. Too hot or too cold? Then we move on to water and food. This leads to another wrong yet useful model called the order of survival. And that order, so I don't know what exception they take or what element, but the standard order for survival, need number one is shelter. Now see, some will argue with that. And maybe, again, if it's not extreme weather, you're in a wilderness environment, but it's mild climate, maybe shelter is not your number one issue. So that can depend, and this makes that point. But anyway, the basic, this is one basic list. Need number one is shelter. Need number two is water. Need number three is food. And then what they call a level up is fire. I think we'll talk about fire at some point in this series. It is an element that has a lot to do with augmenting the quality of life for human beings, actually, for many needs. So we're going to put it on the list. But shelter, water, food, and fire. On this list, shelter is one, number one. This article goes on to say, addressing what your body needs first will help make subsequent tasks more effective in preserving energy. Again, it says each situation is different and this order isn't definitive. In other words, so the order of the list is not always the same depending on your circumstance. Often it says the first thing you might need in a survival situation is shelter to protect you. Then you'll need a form of hydration and then food. But to accelerate all of these, you can use fire as a level up, which we'll explain later, and I'm not going to read you the part on that. They say, let's explore each need in turn. All right, so subtopic here under shelter, what do they say? Shelter, it says, gives you cover from weather, insects, and other nasty stuff, and it insulates you from the cold and the heat. Shelter can sometimes even provide you with camouflage, a negative if you have rescuers looking for you. Your first shelter is clothing. So I chose not to include clothing for this sermon. We're probably going to cover clothing next. So you can say, well, shelter, yes, goes hand in hand with clothing, but it warrants its own separate sermon, so we'll do that. But this says, your first shelter is clothing, so always dress appropriately for the area you'll be traveling in. But like clothes, when building a shelter, think about layers. Many layers can insulate you from the cold much better than one warm coat. So this goes for your clothing, but also for your shelter building. And again, I'm reminded of the example of the polar bear that God actually made with these layers of fat and with two different layers of fur, which actually have these insulating properties. The article goes on to say, consider the ways that we lose heat when building your shelter and make choices to retain your body's warmth. And then it's got a list of all of the aspects now that affect your preservation of warmth. Number one is conduction. What's conduction? Heat loss. Conduction is heat loss through direct contact. Even just sitting on the ground can affect your warmth. Build a bed in your shelter so you're raised off of and insulated from the ground. This reduces heat loss from lying on the cold ground. Some of you have probably figured this out by your own experience. The next one is convection. Convection is heat loss through air contact. Your shelter should protect you from exposure to the wind. The next one is radiation. This is the normal heat exchange your body goes through. Insulation in layers can help prevent this heat loss and trap warmth closer to your body. The next one is evaporation. Evaporation, aka perspiration. Water conducts heat away from the body faster than does air. So staying dry when it's cold is critical. When it's too hot, water can help you cool down. So those are important principles to understand. And the last one here is respiration. Also known as breathing. Putting a mask on helps retain the heat loss through your exhalations. Well, after all we went through with COVID and lockdowns, that's not my favorite one. But in a survival situation where you need to preserve every element now of warmth from your body, then that might be something you take into consideration. All right, so that's from a survivalist physical explanation, but I think makes the point about these intrinsic elements that are required for human beings to survive in the wild, in a hostile environment, if you will. And shelter seems to be universally accepted as an important one. All right, what's the spiritual dimension, which is the most important one of all? Our physical need for outside shelter also then inherently points us to our need for God. But you never thought about that. The fact that you physically, as a human being, do not carry your house around like a fur layer, like a polar bear, and you need shelter outside of yourself, is actually an element that God created in order to point for the fact, spiritually, we need Him as our shelter. Notice beginning Psalm 61. Psalm 61 and verse 3. For thou hast been a shelter for me. There it is. God uses this direct analogy to make the point. Thou hast been a shelter for me and a strong tower from the enemy. Now, there's a different element to a house or a shelter. Well, now you're talking about a tower. Verse 4, I will abide in thy tabernacle forever. So here, the term tabernacle is used in terms of the benefits of a shelter provided by God. I will abide in thy tabernacle forever. I will trust in the covert of thy wings, Selah. What? What does that mean? Now he introduces the symbolism of a bird, a mother bird who actually provides shelter for her chicks, actually under the protection of her own body. And for those little chicks, now she becomes the shelter under her wings. Notice this in Psalm 91, verse 1 through 4. Psalm 91, beginning in verse 1, he that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. So now the analogy is not necessarily in the tabernacle of the Almighty, but actually in God's own personal shadow. Isn't that interesting? He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. What was one of those physical elements that we found shelter actually helps provide for us? Wasn't it protection from the damaging rays of the sun and the heat? And here now God uses this as an example of the fact that we thrive under his own shadow. Verse 2, I will say of the Eternal, he is my refuge and my fortress. What was one of the other elements that we found on that list of needs? Was protection from enemy, right? From threats, animals, whatever it may be in the night. And here God addresses that. I will say of the Eternal, he is my refuge and my fortress. So now a fortress isn't just a shelter to protect you from the elements. It's substantial enough actually to give you defense against those who would threaten you. My God, in him will I trust. Verse 3, surely he shall deliver thee from the snare of the fowler and from the noisome pestilence. He shall cover thee with his feathers. And that, it's a word that actually includes wings. So more than just the feathers, but with his wings, which includes the feathers, as does a hen protecting her chicks. He shall cover thee with his feathers, and under his wings shalt thou trust. His truth shall be thy shield. Wow, that's an interesting element to a shelter. His truth shall be thy shield and buckler. What's a buckler? Something surrounding the person. In other words, so that it's an element of a fortress or a wall or, you know, some type of a bastion that actually gives you separation from a threat. And God uses all of these in symbolism to explain his relationship with those who are under his care and his protection. Pretty interesting. Isaiah 25 and verse 4. Isaiah 25 and verse 4, for thou hast been a strength to the poor, a strength to the needy in his distress, a refuge from the storm. Wasn't that one of the elements that we found that physical shelters provide to human beings, that which we need? Shelter from inclement weather, like storms. And God then provides that. A refuge from the storm, a shadow from the heat. There it is again. When the blast of the terrible ones is as a storm against the wall. So now we're not only talking about refuge from storms symbolically and from heat, but now other threats which come at you like a storm against a wall. Now, emphasizing again the aspect of a fortress or a buckler or a bastion or a wall. So all of these are part of the promises of God. So do you see how making us as physical creatures, which actually require artificial shelter, because without it we are vulnerable. We can't exist like animals do in the wild. We need shelter. And God uses that to say that spiritually speaking, now He is that shelter. I think that's very significant. Psalm 27 and verse 4. Psalm 27, verse 4. One thing have I desired of the Eternal, that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Eternal all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Eternal and to inquire His temple. The house of God. The house of the Eternal. Now, what did we learn all the way back at the beginning of this series when we talked about the habitation of God? And I read you those texts where basically when David had this bright idea to build a house, a temple for God, and remember, God inspired the priest and the prophet to say, okay, I will support that, go ahead with it, but understand this, I don't need your house. I don't need a shelter. So God made that point. I read you all those texts. It's like, what shelter will you build for me? When God says, I'm the one that brought into existence everything that is, how will you build me a house? And yet the Bible is full of this term, the house of God. So how do we make sense of that? The house of God, but it's not the house for God. Oh, but it's a house where God says He dwells. But for what purpose? Because God needs shelter from the elements, from the heat and from the cold, and from predators? Not at all. Because God is more self-sufficient than the polar bear. He doesn't need any shelter. The universe is His realm. So what are we talking about with this house of God thing? One thing I have desired of the Eternal that I will seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Eternal all of the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Eternal and to inquire in His temple. This house is synonymous with a temple. Verse 5, for in the time of trouble, He shall hide me in His pavilion. Aha. What we find out is that all the references to the house of God and God dwelling in it is not for His benefit, it's for ours. Because in this house of God is not a shelter for Him, it's a shelter He provides for us. In the time of trouble, He shall hide me in His pavilion. It's His by ownership. Now we're talking about who holds the title to it. That's why it's the house of God, because He owns it. But it's not for His benefit, it's for ours. In the secret of His tabernacle shall He hide me. He shall set me up upon a rock. So again, the symbolism of the strength, the stability, the assurance of a habitation where human beings can thrive in a relationship with God because He is present there. But it's not for His benefit, it's for our benefit in our relationship with Him. That's the purpose of a house of God. The church is also considered and uses the symbolism of a shelter. 2 Corinthians 6, verse 16, you can turn to it if you want, I'll just cite this. 2 Corinthians 6, 16 says, you are the temple of the living God. Isn't that interesting? You, what? As members of what? The church of God. Jesus Christ is the head. And you are called, then, the temple. And a temple is a structure. And part of the, and we've already seen that part of the function of a temple is to provide a shelter. The church is the house of God. I won't take time to show you all the different proofs of that. I think these are things that you certainly know. So isn't it interesting that the assembly of the called of God under Jesus Christ A church is also compared by God to a house, the household of God, the house of God. Not because we have power to provide any kind of shelter or defense, but because we are in an assembly where God is. And He's the one providing special favors. But you are part of it. If you are called, if you've responded to that call, and if you are fulfilling and seeking to fulfill then His will, you yourself are a part of the house of God. And you derive the benefits from being part of that house. 1 Timothy 6, verse 8. I'm sorry, we'll start in verse 6. 1 Timothy 6, beginning in verse 6. Here we read, "But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we will carry nothing out." Verse 8, "And having food and raiment, let us be therewith content." Now, it didn't mention shelter there, but again, this is emphasizing the principle that human beings have basic needs in order to survive and thrive. Our tendency, however, is to be dissatisfied once we have those basic needs filled, and that's when I get into Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It talks about the psychiatry of human beings and our changing standards for what we think we need in order to be happy. But here is a confirmation of part of that principle. Having food and raiment, let us therewith be content. Meaning, if you've got all the basic things that you need, even if you don't have everything that you want, God says we should learn to be content. Because what if you started losing some of these things that we take for granted? Then all of a sudden, our whole perspective on what it takes to make us happy would change, wouldn't it? And that happens. So, yes, being actually a part of the household of God, being in the shelter of the church, which is the body of Jesus Christ, there's your number one need, even beyond the physical necessities like food and raiment. If we would remember it and take it seriously. John 14 and verse 2, here Jesus Christ in this final time with His disciples before His arrest and suffering, after they had kept the Passover. And part of His instruction here, which you know very well, we always read this on Passover night, John 14, verse 2 and 3, He said, "In My Father's house." So why did Jesus choose to talk about a house, a habitation, a shelter? And why did He talk about His Father's house as if it's someplace where He lives and as if He needs a house? And no, He doesn't. Again, it's owned by God the Father, but it's for our benefit. And in this case, now He uses this concept of a habitation of a house to actually describe something else in the spiritual realm that you and I can't see, we can't touch, and so we need something physical in order to try to relate to it in some way. And so here Christ said, "In My Father's house are many mansions." Poor translation, as we were always taught, not mansions, but offices. More like rooms. Because this isn't a house that has mansions in the house, the way we talk about it in the English. But we are talking about a mansion, a great house which has many rooms. And in this case, the emphasis is on places of habitation, but carry with it offices of responsibility. So that if you're one who resides in this house, you're just not there, you know, to take up space. You know, like refugees that are given free hotel rooms. No, in this case, it comes with responsibility. "In My Father's house are many rooms or offices. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you." A place. And again, the context here in symbolism has to do with a habitation or a shelter. This is a pretty opulent one. Verse 3, and if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. What's the value of this great shelter of this mansion called the house of God, his Father's house? It's because it's where he will be. What's valuable about that shelter is not that it gives you protection from sun and rain and wind and storms and predators. It's because God is there. And that's where we want to be. So it's a description of salvation in the family of God. It's for those who will actually be transformed from flesh into spirit in that one of those resurrections, and then will be added as immortal members of the God family and to dwell, to live with the Father in Jesus Christ forevermore. But it's all described in terms of us living in a dwelling together, because that relates to us. We can get that symbolism. And that's what Christ wants to emphasize. Human beings immediately know they need shelter. So God uses this description of his kingdom and a habitation forever with God and describes it as a shelter, a great mansion in which you have a permanent room. And offices a responsibility to go with it as kings and priests. Psalm 23, verse 6, last text. Psalm 23, verse 6 says, surely goodness and mercy. So we're back to Psalm 23. But after verse 1 and 2, I read now the very last verse of the psalm, where David described symbolically himself as a sheep in the care of a shepherd. And now we find what's the end result. Surely, he said, goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. To what end? And I shall dwell in the house of the Eternal forever. What's the most important habitation? What's the most valuable house? Shelter. It's ultimately the one where we live together in perfect harmony with God. Shelter from the elements and from physical threats by means of a house or a fortress is used by God to teach us how much we need him and how much we can depend upon him to provide for all that we need, both now and in the kingdom to come.
The Church of God, the Eternal, has just presented the sixth message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled Habitat for God and Man, given in Eugene, Oregon, April 13th, 2024.